Right, our next speaker, Tom Coates. Tom talked last year about a web of data, and in the intervening year, it really hasn't got any better. The data hasn't gone away, it's got worse, there's more of it. He now wants to track our lives. So thank you, Tom.
Can you hear me? Brilliant. I am so fucked. Oh, Jesus, okay. Right. I don't know who thought it was a good idea to put me as the thin layer of meat in a Matt Jones, Bruce Sterling sandwich. Such a bad idea. Okay. Right. Where shall I start? Okay. Hello, New Zealand! That went better than I expected. Okay. Hello, my name is Tom Coates, and I am a rampart guardian. I have the cold, dead, tired eyes of a zombie. I am worth 29 points. And just in case you were in Annalise talk, anyone who's in Annalise talk, please raise your hand. Okay, I live at 42 Abbey Street in San Francisco, and regarding my sexual preferences, I'm open to offers. I'm serious. Okay, more seriously, let's try that again. My name is Tom Coates. I work for Yahoo. And my job fundamentally is product design, making up new products. Particularly, new product development. And I've done that for a bunch of companies, including Up My Street, the BBC, and Yahoo. Until recently, I worked at this place called Brickhouse, which I used to explain to people as being about this. Making bets on the future. So what I mean by this is, it's about getting a sense of what you think the future is going to be, and then getting small groups of people, small teams of people, to go out and explore those areas and try and build something that they think will be big. So it's not necessarily, it's slightly riskier, you know. So you could read TechCrunch every day and you could go like, oh, they're doing that, let's build that. Or you could say, let's put slightly smaller amounts of resources in this, look a little bit further ahead, and if it pays off, then you know it's going to be awesome. Now, I think this phrase is a really useful one. If you're a part of a large or even small company, I recommend you think about things in this term occasionally, put some of your resources against making bets on the future. I think pretty much inevitably, if you do it, something comes out of it that pays off. So there you go. The bet on the future I'm working on at the moment is a project called Fire Eagle. Now, just to sort of gauge the audience, can I ask how many of you know about Fire Eagle? It's probably about a third of you. That's good. In my slide here, I say, how many of you have heard of Fire Eagle? Okay, about a third of you. That's good. So that went well. So for those of you who don't know, Fire Eagle is a service that helps people capture, manage, and then share information about their location. So anyone on the left here, anyone could go and write a client that captures someone's location, and then that person can say, yes, it's okay for this thing to capture my location and share it with the internet. That location goes into Fire Eagle, which is like a switchboard in the middle, and then that gets fired off to any service you authorize, you think is, you know, interesting enough or would benefit from getting your location information into it. And it's all like very heavily permissions-based. And you can do all kinds of cool things, like you can put, you know, little badges with the neighborhood you're in on your blog, or you can see where all your friends are, or you can say, geotag photos for me, or you know, all kinds of stuff. All good, okay. So more importantly, from my perspective, Fire Eagle is completely obsessively focused on giving people control over their data and control over their privacy. In fact, I would say probably if you looked at Fire Eagle and said, well, it's two missions. One is help people take their location, use it online. The other one is give them sufficient control over their data and privacy that they're comfortable and confident in doing so. So on this slide, you can see when you share your location with a service like Doppler, you get to say, I'm comfortable only sharing my like neighborhood or my zip code or you know my country. And you can stop this at any time. You can stop sharing. You can change how much information you're sharing, all that kind of stuff. Also, you can hide yourself. Information comes in, doesn't go out. Or you can click on a big button and it gets rid of all the data in the system. We even send you an email once a month to check you're OK sharing your location. And if you're not, we stop. I am quite comfortable. So this is the bit underneath here is the troubling bit. You're OK sharing your location until the end of time. We'll contact you a couple of days before that to check you're still OK. That's an email you probably don't want to receive. And Yahoo knows these things, I'm just saying. Okay, so now I'm interested in Fire Eagle. We built Fire Eagle, not just because it's cool to do interesting things with geo and data and stuff like that, but because we kind of think of it as like a prototype or an example of a kind of service that's going to be increasingly popular, happen more in the next few years. There's a really big future, I think, in helping people capture, manage, and share information about their lives, particularly manage in terms of understanding it in more detail, being able to look at it and correct your life in response to it, and then delete, edit, change, and then put it in places. And this is a territory that's come to be known as sort of personal informatics, and I'm talking about it today as instrumenting your life, instrumenting big dials and levers and cogs and stuff. Now, the other thing that's interesting about these services from my perspective is how many other interesting sort of hot button, exciting territories they butt up against. And this is a map of my mind from earlier last month. And you can see Fire Eagle, which is, of course, completely obsessing me, batting completely closely to privacy issues, geodata, real-time data, personal informatics, visualizations, interface design, all that kind of stuff. So it seems like it's a really cool area to sort of use as a focus to elaborate around. I did a talk on this subject last year with Matt Jones, you've just seen. It was slightly less, you know what I mean. It was called Polite, Pertinent, and Pretty, and you can find it on SlideShare. It's really focused on the practical design aspects of building these services in ways that make them useful and not kind of aggravating. But today I'm going to take a slightly different tack, you can find this online, and talk about those areas that it butts onto, the implications and the ways it resonates out more widely. Okay, cool. So today what I'm going to do is give you, to start off with, a little bit of context, why I think this territory is interesting, where it fits in the wider picture of sort of a web of data. I'm going to give you a quick tour of some of the stuff that people are doing right now in terms of life instrumentation stuff. And then I'm going to give you like three challenges or opportunities, however you want to kind of view it, crisis-tunities, I don't know, that might give you some kind of insight into wider issues. So the sharing of data, the possibilities of real-time data and real-time APIs, and the place of privacy as feature and where we're going with privacy stuff. So I'm going to start off with a bit of context. There we go. So the big idea behind most of my talks is this one, that the web used to be like this, and it's been changing gradually from something like this, which is a set of pages and products backed onto with data sources behind them, through to something where the data sources take increasingly center stage, right? They're interconnected, data flows in between them, and the web pages that are created on the surface, the stuff, are just one interface, one access point for the cool stuff that's going on behind the scenes. The data, photos, videos, tweets, location information, whatever, can manifest anywhere that the network touches, whether that be on your personal mobile appliances or in photo frames in your house or in the city environment, wherever, really. And in the middle, at the heart of it all is the data and the services that create it and manage it. Another thing I talked about last year here, which I think is again like a really important foundational kind of angle to get a good view on this subject, is this idea that your site is not your product. And I talked last year, and I'm going to do it again because I think it's so useful, about Twitter, which is clearly a website where you can go and input information about your status, what you're doing. This is my Twitter page. It has an awesome rainbow on it. I recommend you all go and have a look at it. But it's not just a web page. You can go and update your status by SMS, obviously. Or you can use Twitterific or Twitter or Natsu Lion or Twitter or dozens of other desktop applications. Or you can use many different mobile applications, including this one is my favorite. This is Tweety. And anything that's got that's data-driven can write to it. So this is, when I was in London, this was information about the Bakerloo line and how well that's doing. And we've seen from Matt's talk, plants talking to it, bridges talking to Twitter. Many of you have seen the interface in the lobby here, which visualizes what's going on at Webstock, with, as far as I can tell, the sole purpose to get neurotic speakers near to suicide. which actually, while I'm thinking about it, kind of reminds me, I don't know if I've mentioned how awesome you all are, You guys over there are some of the most attractive people, and you, actually, I have to say, I don't think I've ever felt this way about an audience before. Okay, sorry, bit of a diversion there, right. So the point of that was Twitter is, obviously, the Twitter website is just one part of the product. It is not the product. The product is a way for people to keep in touch with and communicate with one another, and people and objects, it turns out. And the website is just one aspect of that product. It turns out that actually a remarkably limited aspect of that product in the end. About a year ago, 90% of Twitter's traffic was driven from APIs. Now I think it's gone down a bit, but it's still way in excess of 50%. You know, the website is less than half of the point. Right, okay, another example quickly. This is Flickr. Flickr is a website. You go and manage your photos. You see what's going on there. You share them. But actually, you can update your photos. You can upload them from iPhoto, from Aperture, from mobile clients on your phone. You can access them pretty much anywhere through RSS feeds, photo frames, stick them on your blog, get them printed into cards. You know, again, the website interface is just one aspect of that product. And the products are actually focused on the capturing, managing, reflection, and sharing of data. With Fire Eagle, we actually sort of went another step further. We actually almost got rid of the product in the middle completely. You know, the data comes in one end, and it's fired out to anywhere it can be useful. And we don't even make the sort of interface in the middle like a place you would want to go to on a daily basis. It's literally just the switchboard through which everything flows. The point of all this is sort of my theory is this. It's new data sources, the creation of new data sources, new ways to manage and use those data sources. That's where the new product ideas are coming from and have been coming from a couple of years. It's not actually new technologies particularly. It's this explosion of new data. And I don't think this should be particularly a surprise. I don't think we've ever really had a moment like this in history where so much information is being exposed for the first time in an interconnected environment where it can all be sort of joined together and people can see what's going on with it and scrape it and use it and reuse it. Potentially, this is just for this moment in time. I don't know. I'm not sure. But right now, I think the job of the product designer, someone looking for opportunities to make interesting new things, to sort of create the future ahead of them, should be focused on finding, surfacing, exposing that data. It's in the data that we're making the future. And there is no greater potential source of data than people. And as a result, no greater set of opportunities for people who make products. So the challenge is here, how do we give people access to that data about themselves? How do we help them manage it and explore it and understand it and ideally do things with it? And how do we do that in a way that's good and honorable rather than sort of evil and creepy? Everyone with me so far? Say yes. Ah, good. Okay, so I'm going to move on now. I'm going to give you a quick tour of some of the stuff that's going on in life instrumentation stuff. Some of the stuff I think you'll find incredibly familiar. You won't have thought about it in this context. You won't have thought about it in this way. That's okay. Some of it's going to be a little bit weirder. And I think all of it is based on this. All of it is predicated on a new relationship between the people who make products and the people who use them, particularly around data. I don't want to focus too much on this right now. I'm going to come back to some issues of privacy later in the talk. But what I'm particularly meaning here is, you know, it's not good enough. It's not going to work. People aren't going to use these services if the approach we take here is is a company or an organization or a product just tries to leech as much information away from people as possible to use for whatever purposes. That's not good enough. All right, okay. So a while ago, I tried to systematize some of the various ways in which you might instrument your life. And this is some of the data that I managed, the categories of data I managed to form out of that work. There is exciting work going on in every single one of these areas. This is not super future stuff. There is stuff going on here right now from very large companies and very small companies all over the planet. Let me just go through these really quickly. So direct reporting is literally, it's data you put up by hand on the internet. Attention data is things that track what you're doing, with your permission, ideally. Bureaucratic sources is opening up information that was already there that offices hold on your behalf, like the tax office, or your mobile phone company, or your bank. And then the last three are all about sensors. Personal sensors attached to you, sensors in your environment, and of course, back to the spine pope, possessions that report to the network. So direct reporting is pretty easy. This is Flickr. You are capturing information about your life, you take pictures, you annotate them, and then you put them online, where they can be recombined and used in various interesting ways. It's not terribly sexy. It's not like, well, I mean, it's brilliant. I'm not saying it's nothing sexy about Flickr. It's awesome. But it's not some insane future. It's right here, and it's right now. Same thing holds true of things like Delicious and Twitter. You're collecting information. You're putting it online. Doesn't mean you, once you've collected it, you can't do things with it, of course. This is a social thing, along with friend feed, a way of viewing all your kind of wider social networks activity. And another form of like direct reporting is stuff that Doppler does. Doppler asks you to, how many people here know Doppler? Could you please raise your hands? Half of you? Okay. So Doppler is a service made by Mr. Jones and Mr. Biddulph, which you go in and say, I'm going to go on these trips. And it shows you where your friends are going to be, if you're going to be in the same place at the same time. And that in itself is pretty useful. This is their annual report that they send out to people. You can see, and this is like sent out as a PDF to me. It's a visualization of that data that I've put in there. That gives me a better sense of what's going on in my life, how I've been acting. So you can see in last year, I took 13 trips. I traveled 22% of the way to the moon, and I did that at the speed of a butterfly. If you see at the top right there, that's my hometown of Norwich up there, which appears to have been invaded by Daleks. That was, I tell you, that was a bad Christmas. Now, you'll remember Jane talking about World of Warcraft yesterday, and she's kind of pointed at all those figures of you know, when you accomplish something or when you do something, and she talked about like positive and negative feedback and how that kind of information made it easier for you to sort of enjoy or experience the world. Now, this is real life instrumentation. That was game instrumentation, capturing those figures. This is real life stuff. If I wanted to change the way I operated, I could, you know, like, not travel as much. You know, I could say, no, screw that, I'm not going to New Zealand. What the hell are you thinking about? And I'm not going to ever travel again. But no, I mean, it's really useful and interesting insight into your activity. You can see that I think I use, what was that? Lots of CO2. Okay, moving on. Right, so that was direct reporting. This is Last.fm. This is attention stuff. This is the canonical example of attention stuff. As I play music, Last.fm tracks what I've been listening to, creates charts for it. It means that I can see what I was listening to at various points in the past. It means I can share that with people. It means I can be recommended interesting new music I might like. Now, this kind of stuff can happen all over the place. You know, you could do this kind of stuff with the games you're playing. There's a site called Raptor that does that, shows you when you're online, when you come offline again. TV and films that you're watching, the places you go to, conferences and events you've attended, you know, all of the kind of things that you're interested in signing up for. This is my Last.fm page. And this, again, another visualization. This is what I was listening to at the end of last year. This is done by a site called Last Graph. It just goes to Last.fm, gets your data, and kind of plots it in interesting ways. What I find really interesting about this is how different my view of this is from a friend of mine's, Cal. Cal's is, he listens to like one album over and over again for a bit, and then listens to another album over and over again for a bit, and it's like really blocky. And mine's like these kind of incredibly narrow stripes, because I have everything on random. And, you know, getting a sense of how you're acting in that kind of way, getting it, you know, remembering the past by the music you were listening to, that's kind of interesting and fun. This kind of instrumentation of attention is going on all over the place. Here's three other examples. So Amazon, when you're roaming around Amazon, it just tracks what pages you were recently looking at and recommends you things on that basis. Google has a project called Search History, which I have to say, I'll get a picture of my search history and I'll put it up, and what could go wrong, right? And then I was like, that's going to be a disaster. There's going to be lots of filth in it, you know. And it's just really boring. There's obviously nothing in it at all. It's all like, you know, like Webstock, New Zealand, Wellington, you know, which is good stuff, you know, absolutely. But I was expecting something. Expecting something wrong, you know, like deeply sinister. Maybe I'm sharing too much. I don't know. Anyway, and obviously iTunes, which tracks what you're listening, how often you listen to things. And I mean, my entire music collection is based around this. You know, I have like endless playlists of, you know, my top 100 songs, 100 newest unrated tracks that I haven't listened to. You know, it's all based on these numbers. And I think these are incredibly powerful ways for people to document and instrument their lives. The only dark side of this is that quite a lot of companies kind of do this without telling you. And I think that's kind of a bit dubious. So moving into the sort of bureaucratic data, this is a project called Mint. And Mint is a really big deal, actually. And you sort of give it access to your bank account, and then it gives you a different understanding of how you're spending money. So this is bureaucratic data, your phone bills, your tax bills, all that kind of stuff. So it analyzes the money going in and out of your account, shows you what you're spending it on, helps you budget, alerts you when you're doing things that are weird. It's a really good and interesting way to instrument your spending. Another example of things like this is a service called Skydeck. And this, you give access to your phone bills. And it can tell you all kinds of weird stuff. It can tell you whether you should actually be going to a different carrier because or a different plan because of how much you're using it and where. It can also show you all your calls in place, and you can move around and do stuff with it. This is kind of somewhere between bureaucratic data and what comes next, this kind of idea of personal sensors and instrumentation, which is Google Health. And you can see from this, that this is not a small company doing weird experimental work. This is a really large company doing weird experimental work. It's the edge of personal health informatics and bureaucratic data sources. You can get your medical records into it, And there's only really, it's kind of not very difficult to see where this is going for them, particularly since they invested in a company called 23andMe. 23andMe, you get a swab, you stick it in your mouth, you rub it around, you get your DNA, and you send it to them, and they tell you information about your ancestry and what, likely health problems you're going to experience. So here is, there we are. So this is not me, so you don't have to worry about the prostate cancer. There's jokes I could have done there that might have gone in a dark direction, so I'm glad I didn't. Okay. So really fascinating, kind of slightly alarming because it's so new kind of territory, but all kinds of things that could come out of that, like a better understanding of what your health risks are for the future, things that you might want to get checked up on, all that kind of stuff. Now, health, perhaps unsurprisingly, is like one of the major strands of the informatics work that's going on at the moment. This is the most obvious mainstream example of sort of personal health informatics. Nike plus iPod, as you run, it tracks it. You can upload your information about what you've been doing, and get a better sense of how you're doing on that front. There's a company called Body Media that, apart from also doing, corporate wellness solutions, also does lots of personal health informatic products, like this one, to help you kind of get a sense of how many calories you're spending and expending. And all of this is lovely and everything, but I think I found like the monolith, the holy grail of health informatics with the help of Meg Picard, which is this. It's the Daiwa House Intelligent Toilet. It can check your blood sugar levels, your blood pressure, your obesity level, and the new one measures your hormone balances and the temperature of your pee. I kid you not, this is going to change the world. I'm so excited. If it's reporting to the internet, then I'm sold. This is going on Twitter. Okay. Anyway, so that's like the end game for all health. I think this is how health wins. But there's other obviously personal sensors. Location is a really interesting one. This is a thing by a company called Spot. And it's for when people who hike and travel a lot and do lots of outdoorsy things, like everyone here, particularly me. it has a GPS unit in it and a satellite and access to the data stream of satellite phones. So as you're traveling around the world, crossing the Sahara, it's updating your location in real time. And when you press one button, then in the US, the National Guard flies over and rescues you because you're obviously screwed. I've got one of these, and they're kind of not so good for people who spend quite a lot of time indoors and are never more than 6 feet from a TV screen or a computer. But if you're outside and you can get a good signal and you do a lot of outdoorsy things, they're really quite cool. And we got them to hook up with Fire Eagle, so you can get that kind of thing running around the streets and it updates your location on Fire Eagle automatically, which is quite cool. This is another kind of a particularly weird, like kind of personal sensor object hybrid thing. It's a shoe that has a GPS unit in it and a panic button, because it turns out that the early stages of informatics are about problems that affect the super rich, like, for example, getting kidnapped a lot. So quite a lot of informatics stuff at the moment is focused around health and kidnapping. which is good, I guess. And then, of course, there's all the personal information. There's all the information you can capture about your environment, about your home. So this is a project called the Watson. It's one of the first sensors you can put in your environment. It captures information about your energy consumption, exposes it to you in your house, so you can see what's going on. I told my mother about this. She was horrified. She thought my father was going to go in there and turn off all the lights and all the power and we sit in the dark forever. But you know, and you can also put it on the internet so that you can then use it and do things with it. Again, it seems like a niche product. It seems like an early forerunner of something that maybe will never come until I saw this, you know, which is Google Power Meter, which is they want to actually give you a way to visualize and understand all the power you're doing, and they'll use any of these services that are starting to become increasingly commoditized. You clip them around your power cables or something, and they track how much energy you're using, and Google will give you the ability to sort of track and measure that. The other end, we've seen things like this already. This is a project called Andy House in the UK, and it's a house that twitters, captures information about what's going on, lots of information, sticks it up online. Now, I think possibly he had some horrible trouble because this suddenly went quiet. So I guess maybe the thing about, like, you know, the door is open, you know, or whatever, like, maybe he gave away too much information. I'm not sure, but it's gone private now, which is kind of a shame because it's so interesting, and I kind of think, you know, I'll talk a bit about real-time stuff later, but if I was at work and something popped up on my screen going, your front door has just opened, I might go like, you know, that might be a really useful kind of informatic, instrumented kind of part of my life. And, you know, I'm interested here in all kinds of things, like, can you measure the, like, particulate density, the dust in the air of your house, you know, the amount of light that rooms are getting, you know, can you plot that later against how healthy you're doing, you know, like, that how healthy you're doing, okay. Like, more generally, though, like, so that's all kinds of stuff that's going on all over the place. The ubiquitous sensor that we pretty much all have at the moment is the mobile phone. Particularly ones with GPS units, they know where you are. You can use that and do things with it. And there's a lot of potential there because, you know, you carry around this stuff all the time. It sort of represents you on the internet, or it can represent you on the internet. It's a pervasive sensor. So there's all kinds of interesting work going on there. Okay. So I'm running a little bit behind, so I'm going to speed things up a little bit. So that's what's going on right now and how it sort of fits into a wider environment. I wanted to talk about these three areas to end up with that I think are really kind of significant. I think they're significant to me. They relate to informatics in as much as the informatics stuff inspired me to think about them, made me think about them more. There's some things that are problems with informatics and some things that are just general problems that the informatics stuff exposes more readily. And I think in each one of these things, there are particular opportunities for people to go out and make interesting new projects. And that's, you know, this is the way my brain works. You know, I am out there looking for, okay, that's interesting and that's interesting. In two or three steps, these kind of things will be possible. What kind of things can we do that get us there faster, that make interesting projects along the way that you might be able to make products out of? So this is the kind of, like, these are three areas which, if I wasn't working on FireEagle right now, I'd be looking for new product ideas. First one is, data is meant to be shared. We've talked a little bit about how these services capture data, and we've talked a little bit about how those services expose them back to people and allow them to get a better sense of their life as a result of it. But at the moment, most of these services kind of stop at that point. They don't share them further. They don't let them go out to the wider internet. They're not open. I think that's a mistake because I think people should be able to capture data about themselves and then use it as they see fit all over the internet, sharing it with whatever service they think is relevant. So I think this last stage is really important. It's only on the wider network where the full potential of this data can come to play, where anyone can build a service and, you know, give you a different perspective on what you're doing. The old term for this kind of stuff is, you know, mashups, but I think the right way to think about it is the mashup is a sort of prototype for a natural way of working in the future, where we're getting data sources and we're going, you know, I want to be able to take this wherever I want, do precisely what I want with it, make new services out of those collisions. Now, I think we got this right on FireEagle. This is one of the areas that I'm completely convinced is good and right about FireEagle. FireEagle, as I said earlier, by itself is almost nothing. It's like a box you put your location in, and then other people come and get your location and do things with it with your permission. And I think that's the right way of operating. We're not interested in creating the best, perfect experience for you to use with your location. We're interested in helping you take that little bit of data and transforming every other product on the internet that you care about with it. So your email. Could your email geotag itself so that when you send and receive things, you can say, I want to see all the emails I've received from people in India. I want to see all the emails I sent when I was in New Zealand. When I write a Twitter post or a blog post, I'd like to geotag that as well, so that I can then say, I want to see all the conversations about Barack Obama in New Zealand versus in Nebraska. You know, that's really interesting and really useful, and we can't build all of those things. So instead, what we do is we say, you get that data, that one little fragment, use it how you want. Another service that I think has got it really right is Patchbay, which Matt referenced. I'd really recommend looking at this. It's really interesting. This is about dashboarding sensor information from distributed sensors. Anyone can capture this data and put it online with these sensors. And then Patchbay acts as a hub with its own set of APIs that other people can then build against and do things with. It's still at that proto stage, open data capturing and reuse, but I think it's really significant and important. And one of the reasons I think it's important is because of things like this. You know, I talked earlier about how data was the foundation for new product ideas rather than technology. And you can see this is like three axes of data. So you've got users and what they're doing, and you've got information about music, and that creates Last.fm for you. Show me what my friends are listening to. Analyze what I'm listening to. Fire Eagle on the other side is capturing information about location. But what if all three of those were joined together? What could you do then? And that's, I think, where you get these ideas of, I want to plot where I was on the map when I was listening to things on my iPod. That's kind of vaguely interesting. Gets more interesting when you're able to go, what is the taste of people in particular areas? What are the regional, local charts for neighborhoods in a town about what people are listening to and thinking about? That's a whole new project, and a whole new potential product. So if you think about this stuff as a whole range of different data sets coming online, each one of which creates a larger kind of insane nth dimensional product possibility space, you can see all the potential opportunities for new things to emerge out of that. So again, getting the data out in public is really important. Another way to think about this is almost like a lens. Now, I don't know how many of you went to see Fiona Romeo's talk, which you should have done, because it was good. It was really good. But if you saw Mike's introduction yesterday, he will have talked about the number of stars and galaxies in the universe. So imagine this here. Imagine this is all the content on the internet. Everything there. It's like 400 billion stars in a galaxy, 100 billion galaxies out there, and new ones being created all the time. It's all the content on the internet. It's completely unfathomable and unmanageable until you start imposing another data set on top of it. So looking at it through the lens of sociality, my relationships and my friends, suddenly things become comprehensible. There's some stuff there out of the wider mass in the universe that I know is now more interesting or more important. What they do will surface that information to me. I think you can look at the last 10 years of stuff we've been doing on the internet and think of it really as us getting one data set, my social network, and plunking it on a whole range of other things that pre-existed, and that's created Facebook, it's created Flickr, it's created Delicious, it's created Upcoming, Bebo, all of these services that are the really big deal right now are based on one data set hybridized with everything else that exists in the world. So my challenge to you in this section is, can you think of other data sets that you could hybridize with the rest of the world? Can you surface some information some way and create the next one of those explosions? And you're only going to do that if you're open. So the one I'm looking at the moment is an individual's location. It's a completely different framework, from this one. It surfaces different information, but it's still potentially really useful. The person who created the content or where a person is could give you a completely different access on everything on the internet. And almost any kind of data out there could be a lens. So that's my first challenge to you. What kind of data could you impose on the entire rest of the internet to create a brand new lens that would transform it? The second thing I want to talk about is real-time technologies. And I think the instrumentation area here has really opened this area completely wide for me because I'll show you, actually. So Fire Eagle, again, like a switchboard, you update your location in it, stores it in the middle, sends it out to people who are interested. Well, that's actually not the case, unfortunately, if only it were. Those people have to come and ask Fire Eagle, where is this user? And we'll tell them. So, in the real world, a sensor can keep broadcasting information ambiently in the background. And this other service, Fire Eagle's in the middle, big blue stripe, the service on the right, has to go and check every so often to see if that user has moved. This is the normal basic way of doing APIs at the moment. It's really good, it works really well, except for these kind of things. Now, that it comes and queries and polls us every few minutes is expensive for us, because that person may not have moved. They may have used FireEagle once and then gone, I don't know, and then like moved on and got a job or something. What a waste of money from our perspective to have that person coming in all the time and hammering on the door and seeing if they've moved at all. And this is a real pain because there's all kinds of services you could do if you got those alerts, got them like alerts. A friend wanders into my neighborhood. I want to be told. Someone who comes from like half the planet away happens to be in the part of San Francisco I now live in. That's brilliant. But if I'm only going to find out like 2 days later or half an hour later or 45 minutes later, that's not so great. To do that, they'd have to poll all the time. That would cost a lot of money. Now, the interesting thing about this for me is that people have been working and there may be solutions now in place. This has been a long-standing problem, the messaging problem on the internet. And I think we may actually be coming close to a point where we have some workable technology to play with. Now, I'm a product person, not an engineer, so I'm not going to talk too much about this. But the simple version of this is XMPP is like open source instant messaging protocol that doesn't only have to do communication between people. It can also do it between machines. It can send information like data IMs between things. Now, a whole bunch of companies have been exploring this space. The biggest one that people know about is Twitter, which was doing quite a lot of stuff with it for a while. That's now disappeared. But we've been exploring it. This is Seth Fitzsimmons. He's the lead engineer on FireEagle, and he's awesome. He's got a really big head. He started us looking into XMPP, pretty rapidly persuaded us that it was something that we really should be making a core part of the platform. And in fact, we have. So if people out there who are interested in playing with it, there is now an XMPP API for FireEagle. This means that if you've built an application that wants to get information about a user's location, and that user has said it's okay for you to have it, you can receive it immediately, within a second of them moving, within a second of that update coming in. And that a whole bunch of interesting services come out of that. Now, I'm actually going to risk something and actually try and do a live demo, which requires me to use the internet, and it's probably the worst idea I've ever had. This is using Google Maps, because there are other internet companies. And it's using a, let's see if I can get this working. Where are you? There we go. Live pings coming in from FireEagle, completely anonymized, so it's only showing them at the city level, and it's not showing all of them, and hopefully it'll work. There we go. Someone in Wellington, this minute, just updated their location on FireEagle. Now, if you're in the room and you have a FireEagle account and you've played with it, type something in now, it'll go off to FireEagle, and then without me having access to the server through the API, I may get a ping. It may not happen to you because it's not all of the users, but it could happen. This is not getting as many in as I'd expect. There we go. So this is real people in the world right now updating their location, right? So this is real human beings around the internet. The physical world, sorry. I get those confused, but real people are around the world like updating FireEagle live. And any person who's building an application against FireEagle could potentially be having access to that. These all appear to be Wellington. That's really surprising to me, but okay. Another Wellington. Ooh, that's a different place. There we go. So a ping's just come in from Ashland. I don't know where that is. I'm not even sure that's a real place. Near Gumtree. And Wellington again. Now, I mean, when we first set this up, I swear to God I spent like, with the full stream, I spent an entire day like sitting there like this. Because like these projects, they're kind of slightly anonymous. You can't really see what the users are doing. So that's Medford in I guess, England. And another ping coming in. They sometimes bunch up a little bit, so you get like four or five in a chunk. And this was so useful to me. This was so great to really understand what was going on. If you want to type in something with a really rude name in it, you should do that. That would be funny. This is like literally live pings coming in. And so someone could build a service and get and be able to access all kinds of cool stuff here. We've actually built another little app, which I don't know if I can show you this, which is one that we're going to distribute so that people who are building applications against FireEagle can see their own pings from their own users coming in live. I don't know if this is going to come out there. Anyway, so this is a app we'll be distributing soon, which ping puts things on map. Anyway, cool. Right, going back to the main talk. Now, I think this is brilliant, this XMPP stuff. I think it's really going to open up a whole range of fascinating possibilities. But the most interesting thing for me about it is that I recognize when playing with it how completely ill-equipped I had become to think about things in this kind of way. Over the last 10 years or so, we've retrained ourselves to not really understand real-timeness anymore. I think this is a huge opportunity. There are some incredible things we could be doing. I just don't know what they are. I really genuinely think if you look at this area for any period of time, you start recognizing that everything from computers talking to one another or humans talking to computers, there's all kinds of stuff going on here. But it's really hard to get a sense of where the product opportunities are. But I'm pretty sure there are many here. So this is a list of things you could kind of think about if you wanted to. I'm not going to go into too much detail about this, but there's all kinds of stuff. Like, what would a real-time Flickr be like? What would you do if you had delicious in real time? If when a friend bookmarked something, you got alerted, or when 5 or 10 people bookmarked the same thing, you got alerted. Would that be intrusive? What if you got an alert when you got paid from your bank? Kind of sent something, ching, money's come into your account, or ching, money has gone out of your account. Like, there seems to be like endless possibilities here, and we haven't even gotten near them. So my second challenge to you all is, the first one was find some data, work out if you can hybridize it with everything. This one is, there's something really big in real time. And I'm telling you now to go off and explore it. The last thing I want to talk about in my last 5 minutes is privacy, which is clearly a huge issue that comes out of any of these sort of instrumentation stuff. Now, this is the kind of image we have of privacy on the internet at the moment, where things are going. And I want to talk about the really big issue on this page, which is, of course, spanking. Or Sean Penn. No, hang on. I'm losing track of things. I don't know what the hell this is about. Why the death of privacy? Phone scams. Spanking. Whole math. Sean Penn. Like, this is the best magazine ever. Okay, so like privacy. So this is basically where people think they are with privacy. People think of it as a really scary territory where everything's going to go horribly wrong. I actually have a slightly different take on it. I think I as a product maker, I kind of want to give you a different take on this based on the stuff that I've learned over the last year or so working on Fire Eagle. So there's a few lessons I've learned. To start off with, there's a really big difference between the anxiety and reality around privacy. It's not to say that there isn't legitimate problems in both sides of this. Well, there are real problems in this kind of area, but things people are anxious about don't always map easily on top of them. They're kind of different. I'll give you an example. So some people who use Fire Eagle are very conscious that they don't want people to know where they live. They don't want to ever expose that information about where they live. The weirdest thing about that for me is that pretty much everyone's address on the planet is in a phone book. And phone books are found, in skips on streets. They're everywhere. Everyone has one. So people have this anxiety, and for most people, it really doesn't make any sense. So what does that mean for you as a product maker? It really doesn't matter, is the point. You have to fix both. If you're dealing with privacy stuff, you have to fix all the things that are actually problems, and you have to really fix the things that people are worried about as well. So we're actually looking at how to fix that precise problem so that people feel more comfortable in Fire Eagle. Jesus. Another thing I've learned from this is there's a real distinct difference between personal information and private information. Anyone who's ever written a blog post or posted a thing on Twitter would understand that, I think. People are often very comfortable to share really intimate personal things in public because, maybe it helps. But there's some areas that, they wouldn't want to go, wouldn't want things to cross into. I think this gets conflated all over the place in really bad ways. The press conflates this stuff a lot, it's not helpful. So, I posted a thing a couple of years ago about my absent father who I hadn't seen in like 30 years or something. I actually found putting that in public incredibly helpful. I got lots of support from people. It was really interesting and really good. But, I don't want any of you to find out about my moon-based laser cannon. That's a secret. That's private. my love between me and my laser cannon is that's my own business. Whatever Anna Lee would have you know, have you believe. But the interesting thing is, you know, the personal versus private thing, it's not up to you as a product maker to make that distinction on behalf of users. So this is the second lesson I learned, is the decision about what constitutes public and what constitutes private and what constitutes personal is not up to you to make. And, you know, the example that Annalie's given around Facebook are really good here. Facebook assumes that you'll want to make a whole bunch of stuff like private and a whole bunch of stuff like semi-public. It's not really up to them to make that decision. Another thing I've learned is that your privacy policy is not the same as actually helping your users. So for example, this is a page from Fire Eagle. There we go. This is what happens when you're authorizing a site. You say, Doppler can actually have access to this amount of information. I can update my location. Now, when we ran this by the privacy and legal people at Yahoo, they came back with verbiage that was probably about, would fill the screen, essentially. You know, a whole great big chunk of incredibly clear, incredibly open, very reasonable and good text that no one on this planet would ever read before they clicked through and agreed to something, or just got alienated and ran away. You know, that is not protecting your users. Being really clear with your users and simple language that they might actually read, that is helping people. And I think this comes into, you know, like a larger area, frankly, which is how we think about privacy, and particularly in these areas. I talked about this earlier. I said like everything was predicated on a new contract with users, and I think that's absolutely true. If we want people to use these services, to feel comfortable using them, to increasingly take advantage of the possibilities in this area, we have to give people the ability to capture information, bring it to the party on their own terms, understand what you're offering and what the cost is, manage and edit, delete, change that data, and if they don't like the service you're offering, take it away with them again. Now, that may seem counterintuitive, but it's open, it's honest, and it's reasonable, and I think it's going to happen. And I think it's going to happen increasingly because it's already happening. Because you can start offering these kind of things as extra features, as extra functionality that really genuinely helps people. It can become a competitive advantage for you if you're building products to really address privacy and do it well. I think this has really worked for Fire Eagle. People use us rather than other services because we make them feel and actually give them more control over what they're doing. They have less anxieties. We work to keep them informed, empowered. They know what they're doing. And I think that really helps. So, you know, like, this is why I'm positive about this privacy stuff. I'm actually quite positive about this. Like, when things get under stress, when things change, then people codify things. They change things. They work out a new way of approaching it. When the U.S., well, before it became the U.S., was under stress, where its rights were compromised, it went and wrote the Bill of Rights. It codified what they thought a reasonable way of behaving would be, you know, towards its citizenry. And I think this is what's happening right now. I think we can see this manifesting gradually. I think actually you could possibly look at this as, you know, the beginning of like a golden age of privacy where unthought of, unexamined assumptions are now being interrogated in public. When people do bad things, there's scandal in the newspapers. And so my last challenge to you today is to not think about privacy as a constraint on innovation, but as a way of pushing innovation, as an inspiration for new and incredibly important work. You can get more users. You can do more interesting things if you meet these anxieties head on rather than skirting around them or worrying about them. Privacy problems, as they exist, are an opportunity for product makers. They're not a barrier. Embrace them, attack them, explore them. And I think, you know, like exciting and interesting work will come out of that. Okay, so that's my 3 points. I hope they've been useful. That's all I have for you today. Today's typeface has been Archer. Thank you very much.